Today on the show, we give cryptic warnings, change the future, and finally explain why we have no time to explain.
You are so corny.
Welcome to Lore Party, the podcast that explores the stories, characters, and universes of our favorite video games. I'm Connor.
And I'm Kevin.
And we have some very special guests with us on this episode. I'm extremely pleased and excited to introduce Orchid and Elemist, the hosts of the Guardians of Lore podcast. How are you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. It's a pleasure to have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourselves. Explain the show. I know you talk Destiny. We talk Destiny. We have a lot in common. But for any of our listeners not familiar, what's Guardians of Lore all about?
Guardians of Lore is a lore podcast where Elemist and I talk about the actual lore books themselves. So he and I trade off actually reading the lore entries, kind of like a book club podcast. Makes sense. So we'll read them and then we'll discuss them as we go on. So our listeners can kind of go on the journey through the actual lore books with us.
I love that.
So it's kind of a fun thing where sometimes we don't actually read the lore books before we do them on the podcast. Because I don't always do my homework. So I'm like, oh, this is a surprise, two lore entries down. And he's like, how is this a surprise? If you actually, read the lore book, you would know this, because I didn't read it before we started. That's why. But so it's a lore book club podcast.
That's awesome. That live off the cuff feel. I like that.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Here on Lore Party, we're very rehearsed. We don't. I can tell.
Yeah. your show notes are very organized.
Thank you. We try. But no, yeah, it's so cool to have you guys here. I mean, just talking with other Destiny nerds, and Kevin and I are big fans of the game, obviously. We've done a couple episodes here so far in this season of Lore Party, and it's just a pleasure. It's exciting to, have fellow Destiny nerds on the show and talk about, from my opinion at least, one of the most interesting and maybe controversial and maybe just talked about characters in the Destiny lore who at least shows up in the game. Like, they actually have a presence in the game. And that is the Exo Stranger herself, who we've come to know as Elizabeth, aka LC Bray. There's a lot to know about her, safe to say.
Spoiler warning for this one.
Oh, of course, as always. And so you meet the Exo Stranger for the first time on Venus during one of the story missions, and I think it's safe to say she made an impact right away. Just kind of like our first impressions of her were this, mysterious, enigmatic figure that, we didn't know much about. Elmas, Orchid, did you guys play? I mean, I assume you played Vanilla Destiny, but tell me about your first experience with the Exo Stranger.
I first played Destiny 1. I didn't play the beta. I first started playing pretty much around when The Taken King came out. I very much enjoyed the game, and, I was intrigued with the Exo Stranger. I really liked her story, and I wanted to know more, and was very put off that we didn't get any more.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, who is this character? What doesn't she have time to explain?
Yeah, that's a good point. It made us curious and wanting to know more. As you both pointed out, it's like, yeah, we want more, and we're a little frustrated that we don't have it, but it's also like, we're on the hook now. And we're along for the ride officially, and we should probably preface. We've kind of come to learn in the Destiny universe that there are multiple timelines, and when you talk about timelines, everything gets kind of wonky. Everything can get a little confusing. But we have since learned that the Exo Stranger comes from an alternate timeline, and so that's important to know about her, that she's not just from a place that's far away. She's also from a time that's far away. So that kind of informs her character. That kind of gives us an understanding of this is maybe why she's kind of guarded, and keep playing her cards close to the chest, because she's not only from a different place, but a different time. or well, she's actually from the same place, but I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself.
Time travel. Yeah.
But there that was kind of our early impression of her. She kind of shows up as this, you know, aloof, not wanting to give off much information. And she almost seemed distracted when we first meet her. She's like, her mind is somewhere else and she's talking to someone else in her ear and all this stuff. And yeah, of course, the iconic line, I don't even have time to explain why I don't have time to explain. Like everyone playing Destiny at that time immediately grabbed onto that, like, what does that mean? So it became a running gag, but and Kevin, you and I have talked about like Beyond Light really explaining a lot and expounding on a lot. We now know that yes, the Exo Stranger comes from another time. So that's kind of important to know about her.
She's just this out of order guardian that shows up out of nowhere. And she guides us like with, you know, through the Black Garden and finally destroying its heart and everything. Cause it's even the Black Garden in the beginning of Destiny 1 was like, they didn't know if it was real. They heard of it. They're like, we think it's a real place. We got to find it. We don't know. Like the Vanguard's out to kind of get it, you know?
Yeah. That actually reminds me of, the Black Garden was sort of the main goal of Vanilla Destiny, the first campaign. You guys have probably read more of the actual lore entries than I have personally. What can you tell us about the Black Garden? Is there a lot of solid information about it beyond it's just a place kind of on Mars, but not really, and the Vex think it's important? What else do we know about it?
So the Black Garden itself is outside of time and space. And the Vex that actually worship in it are feared by other Vex. Like they worship the darkness that resides in the Black Garden, and the other Vex all view that as heretical and fearful.
So these Vex technically not part of the main hive mind then?
Yeah, is it like a divergence?
It's more like a divergent branch.
Interesting. And relating this to Elsie, the Exo Stranger, does she kind of have this knowledge from another timeline that, you know, she sort of knows something that we don't about the Black Garden? And even though she's not telling us explicitly what it is, like you've just explained, but she knows that it's trouble and sends us to destroy it. Is that a perspective that she has from another timeline, or is it just kind of a common sense thing? Like, hey, this Black Garden is trouble. We should shut it down.
It is something that she gained from another timeline.
Okay.
Because she is essentially stuck in a time loop, and the loop, like the timeline actually ends with her ending her sister's life, and then it loops.
Whoa. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's sad.
That's deep. And I actually, I'm learning about this for the first time right now. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, every time she eventually goes and kills Anna, she gets booped back into another timeline.
Oh my God.
That is like her dark timeline, essentially.
Wow.
Where something may be different or something might not be different. And so what can she change to try to get to like a favorable outcome?
She's essentially our Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Stuck in Groundhog Day.
But the kind where she has to kill her sister.
It's a little darker than Groundhog Day, but it's, yeah, same premise.
Just a little bit.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's huge, and I really want to pull on that thread. For really quick context, though, if anyone not familiar, obviously, the Bray family, very big deal. Clovis Bray the First was the founder of this kind of company / clan that created tons of Golden Age technology. And, you know, Elsie and her sister Anna, they were grandchildren of Clovis Bray the First. So they kind of grew up in the shadow of this brilliant mind, and they're part of this very influential family. And yeah, that family tie is something that Elsie kind of carries with her through her time travels. And this time loop thing, I literally did not know about. So like, you know, she lived through the Golden Age. She lived through the collapse as an Exo. So she has that perspective of a time before the collapse that most Guardians don't have. So she has all this knowledge that she's burdened with. She has this connection to her sister that she's burdened with. How exactly does she get to this place where she needs to kill her sister in this time loop. How does that happen?
So, and this is all based off of the Dark Future lore book. Essentially, Keitel, Aramis, Savathun, like all the enemy forces actually gang up on the city and wipe most of humanity. Whoa. Elsie is one of the survivors. So she tries to rally the troops and she's like, all right, we need to just do something. We need to save people. So she hatches up a scheme to go after who is then the hive god, Eris.
Eris Morn? Oh, yes. No way. You guys are blowing my mind right now. I'm sorry. Like, I feel like such a noob.
Zavala gives like, and I had that same reaction.
Okay, good.
Zavala gives this iconic like WTF moment of Savathun was just a puppet. Wow. The real threat is Eris Morn.
Wow.
And Elsie and Anna and Zavala are gathering their forces to storm essentially Eris's keep. That's when Anna actually betrays Elsie.
Oh, wow.
And there's an actual fight between the two sisters. And it ends with Elsie taking Anna's life. And then it causes the loop.
Whoa, that is crazy. So during this loop, Elsie goes back in time to kind of our timeline, or is it, and that's like she's what she's trying to escape.
Essentially,
from?
She's trying to make sure that her future, the dark future, does not happen.
Gotcha.
Which is why she interacts with our guardian the way she does.
I see.
Why not just go back in time and kill baby Eris? Like, why not? Like, I know a decent amount about this too. But my always biggest question is, why not just go kill Eris? Like, if she's going to be the problem,
like,
get rid of the
problem. Before she becomes a hive god, just find her before that.
But that, you can't just go kill people because you think they're going to be a problem.
I do it in the Crucible all the time.
Murder.
But yeah, Kevin, we're getting into Minority Report territory.
But Guardians come back.
But yeah, you can't.
Yeah, Guardians don't count because they can just resurrect.
That's a different show.
From what I've read, one of the reasons why she doesn't do this, one of the reasons why she doesn't go kill Eris, is because she is constantly thinking that she can change the outcome without having to destroy people. Because obviously she doesn't want to kill her own sister anyway. But also, like, she's like, well, what if I could not have to kill anybody? What if I don't have to, you know, destroy Eris? What if I don't have to, you know, kill my sister? What if I don't have to do these things? And I think that is kind of commendable as a guardian, because like, you yourself as a guardian are immortal. So death as a concept with you, as your relationship with death, is completely different than somebody who is obviously not a guardian.
Yeah, it sounds like she's trying to find a better way. Just find a way to go back in time at the times where she can make a difference, like find the points in the timeline where she can make a difference and guide our guardians, the player characters, in subtle ways. Like, hey, here's how you can keep the darkness from, you know, gathering too much power or uniting and crushing us. Like, here's how you can avert my future. So it's like not a blunt force solution. It's kind of making subtle changes where she can. That's
well,
really cool.
And I am going to make the one distinction. Mm-hmm. She is a guardian only in ideology.
Right.
She, like, everything she's doing is to protect humanity and protect those that she loves, but she doesn't have a ghost. She doesn't channel the light. She has learned how to channel stasis, and that's about it.
Right. All right, we're going to keep this conversation going, but first, a quick break.
All right, so we meet Elizabeth now, basically, in this new Beyond Light stuff. But then, like, she started using this weird ability, as we all know, that is super OP. OP, man. Like, stasis is crazy. And, like, it's really risky. Like, she kind of even tells you, she's like, hey, like, here's the power that I have. She literally comes out of nowhere with this new power that's like crazy. And she's like, oh yeah, you could do it too. It's by harnessing the darkness. And you're like, wait, what? So yeah, so she shows up and basically she even tells you, she's like, hey, like you could do this too, but you really got to be careful. Like she's like goes through this like CVS receipt list of like things you have to watch out for. And like as a guardian, don't do this.
Side effects
that,
may include.
And trains you.
The following.
Yeah, basically. She explains like how like, you know, it kind of drives people mad at times. And we see that with the Elixni who harness it. Like we see them go kind of mad too. So she brings like these kind of cryptic and grim warnings of her alternative futures. And, you know, we see that the guardians embrace the darkness and then they succumb to it and then they destroy humanity. And then it's important that, you know, our guardian does not do that. So she kind of, she's even wary of us. She trusts us, but she's very wary of even us using it.
Yeah. Like you mentioned, Elemis, Elsie has this, you know, she's not of the light. She's a guardian, kind of only an ideology, like you said, but she has learned how to turn darkness against itself, so to speak, like kind of weaponize a form of darkness with this power called stasis. And yeah, like you said, Kevin, it's just, it's a calculated risk, it seems like she's making, where it's, if I go back in time and teach or, you know, help the guardians master stasis, you know, obviously it's risky because they're weaponizing darkness, but it could be worth it if it means I can break this cycle. I don't have to live through this future of killing my sister and watching humanity die off, basically. Like it's that gamble. It seems like, you know, worth the risk to her though.
And on top of that, I mean, she actually knows the origin of like how humanity found stasis. I mean, it was Clovis that was experimenting on it.
Throwback to our first episode, everything bad is Clovis's fault, basically.
Oh my god, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I like this idea of Elizabeth kind of having a larger role in the future of Destiny, hopefully. I mean she has a part to play, and I'm sure we'll, you know, other characters will take center stage in new stories as they come out, but I like to think that you know, this is indicative of Elsie will have to keep learning these lessons and taking these risks and relying on us, the players, to help her break this very tragic cycle.
Do you guys think she'll probably have a bigger role, like maybe like involvement in the Vanguard? I mean, she's already kind of interacted with them and stuff.
I don't think so at all. And that's only because she's not a guardian. If anything, she's acting like the Vanguard for stasis.
Oh, I was about to say that. Essentially, her, Eris, and Drifter essentially are the Dark Vanguard.
So we've kind of gone over who she is. Like, she's a member of the Bray family, granddaughter of Clovis Bray, grandfather, you know, she's really closely tied with his experiments, quite literally becoming an Exo, surviving the collapse. She gets to see the world in the Golden Age. She gets to see the City Age. She then sees the fall of the city. I mean, she has all these perspectives that I would probably say quite literally nobody in the game has. Practically nobody has really seen everything that she has seen that we've interacted with currently. Probably aside from like the Clovis head, who was sleeping anyway. But I just kind of think like all of these past events that she's experienced in her own timeline, but then in like all these countless other ones. I mean, this has to have, you know, influenced her throughout every timeline she's ever had. And she clearly harbors, you know, animosity towards her grandfather and calls, you know, all his behavior and all that stuff. Like she really, I mean, she shits on him the entire time. She hates this guy. And it's almost like, I kind of feel like she blames him for everything. Like, she doesn't really blame, like, the darkness, kind of. She like, as, like, the enemy. She kind of blames the reason for all of this shit happening is her grandfather's fault. Like, it's his fault. He's the reason why. Don't make his mistakes. Like, let me help you make sure that you don't end up like him or, like, make stupid shit like you know, mistakes like he does.
And this comes through in some of the just personal remarks she'll make throughout the game, is just talking about just kind of referring to Clovis Bray the First in passing. Like, he didn't care about any of us. Like, his family were employees to him and nothing more, and all he cared about was his legacy. Like, we again discussed that in our first episode, but like, I almost wonder, does she blame him or resent him for making her an exo? I guess that's probably kind of a obvious answer, but like, what I'm wondering is, you know, it seems to me like you said, Kevin, she's lived through all of this traumatic stuff, very scarring stuff, and she wouldn't have lived through most of it unless she had become an exo back during the Golden Age. So it's kind of like, does she maybe see this body as a prison? I don't want to project on her too much, but like, I just have to wonder about that kind of thing. Like, does she resent being an exo? Does she resent her grandfather for inventing exo technology? That's some things I wonder about.
I personally think that she would at first. By the time humanity is at war with the Vex, she's still got animosity towards Clovis, but we see that animosity kind of melted away when dealing with a different part of Clovis. Clovis won
when he became an exo, right?
Yes. Because of the war with the Vex, Clovis commissioned to have his exo body created, but without the memories of Clovis. And that was Clovis one. Throughout the war with the Vex, the number, like, he kept getting resets and it kept, like, the number kept increasing until finally he was on his 43rd life and he was like, reset me one more time, take away all my memories, and give me a different name. Give me the name that they call me on the battlefield. And she actually was like, if she was an exo or if she was human, she probably would have been crying at that point because she had grown so attached to this version of her grandfather.
Yeah, Kevin and I talked about this a bit in the first episode. Like, it was wild for Clovis Bray to kind of give up his memories like that. But like you've explained, I'm kind of getting a new understanding of the Clovis Banshee sort of bridge connection. I'm getting a new understanding of that. They were basically different people already to begin with. And like you explained, Elsie had this new relationship with someone she technically knew, but she was also getting to know for the first time because he had become an exo. He had put himself in a synthetic android body like she did. And they sort of bonded together through that process when they're fighting the Vex. And that's crazy how, like, you have this acrimonious relationship with your grandfather, and then he is remade. He becomes kind of a different person, and you bond with him. Like you said, like, she would have been crying by the time he was rebooted for the last time because, you know, they grew close. It's crazy how, like, you can be two people in that way, and how exo technology, which, by the way, is only made possible through Vex technology kind of being reverse engineered. Like, that gives you the possibility of having two lives like that. And it gives Elsie the possibility of having that relationship with her relative that she didn't have in the first place. That's insane because of
that war, she knew how dangerous the Vex were. And in the dark future, she actually talks to Zavala and she's like, okay, so where did things go wrong? And he talks about, well, yeah, we sent some guardians into the Black Garden and they came out wrong. Like, we just had them doing reconnaissance and they came back just different. So taking the whole, like, Black Garden bit, and she made the connection that, oh, it's the Vex in there and her personal experiences with the Vex. And it's just like, oh, this is the next step. This is what we have to prevent.
Yeah. In general, breaking the cycle of that dark future and averting that dark future and all the things that it brings, including killing her sister, like, that's what drives her. And that's what we've come to understand about Elizabeth Bray, the exo stranger. And, you know, we talked about, like, all these things that she's gone through since becoming an exo. makes me wonder, quick side discussion. If given the option, just hypothetically, would you guys want to become an exo, like live forever and see the future by living through it? Or would it not be worth it, do you think?
Me personally, I don't know. I honestly, like, I really don't know. I really like food, like a lot. Like, I love food, man. So
exos still eat?
Yeah, but is it the same? Like, I'm thinking like the Matrix. Like, how did the robots know that, you know, Tasty Wheats would taste like Tasty Wheaties? Like, how would they know? Chicken. Why is that why everything tastes like chicken? Like, you know what I mean? Like
the Matrix is telling me the steak is juicy.
Exactly. So I don't know. I mean, yeah.
Now, see, my thing is my body tends to hate me a lot. So
sure.
I would gladly take up anybody on that offer.
Just do it now. I know, waiting.
Well, because like I'm constantly sick. I'm constantly like having issues with body parts. So like, yeah, I would totally become an exo right now to not have to deal with all that.
I get that. What about you, Orchid? What's the call there?
I probably would, because I've always wanted like a hot robot body. That's like always Cyberpunk. Been a goal of mine, because I always want like cool like blade legs or something. especially that's a dream is like cool blade legs. You know, something just like really neat like that, you know, like run faster, jump higher, extra brain space so I can just like download more things and like have more knowledge and, you know, like better eyesight and it just like lots of upgrades. So probably.
So would you guys say that since Elsie is still number one, would you say that, you know, her entire experience, like, that's got to be, I don't want to say the ultimate experience, but that's got to be like a pretty damn different experience than most exos.
Yeah.
So she is not actually Elsie 1.
I thought she was Elsie 1.
No, she's Elsie like 851.
Wait. Wait a minute. Explain that. I'm confused. I thought she was always Elsie 1.
No.
Well,
because
she's been in that time loop for a while, right?
No, that's not even the time
loop.
Well,
no.
So in the Lament.
This is before the time loop.
Yeah, this is before the time loop. So in the Lament book that you can get doing the Lament quest.
Legacy's Lament.
Yeah, thank you. there is a part where, God, I think it's entry 6. There is a part where you can go and she's talking to Reba 3, her friend, who she doesn't know is her friend, but Reba does know that she's her friend and tries to tell Elsie to go to Clovis's office. And Clovis's office has this memory chip and it has all of her previous memories. And it's E1 through 850 or something, or 815. And it's
815.
It's 815. Thank you. Yeah. And it's all of her previous memories.
Wow.
From all of her previous kind of like resets.
Yeah.
My God. And
so it's bank E for Elsie, 1 through 815.
Mm-hmm. Well, so then,
Mother of God.
I mean, technically, she still had, then if she, because she loads all that.
No.
I thought she loads at least the beginning stuff.
Yeah, later. But during the lore book, she doesn't.
Wow.
So, gotcha. But so you can later, because she's able to collect that. Not all exos are able to find all of their memory chips.
Yeah, but what I mean is more like currently how she has done that. Because I remember, I don't remember what I read it in, but she loaded all of that back, and then she technically, essentially, her number is 800. Was it 16 now, right?
Yeah.
But she still has the collective memories of everything, whereas current exo don't have that. But also she has those amount of memories is like insane compared to most exos now. Do you guys think that perspective, though, like different than everybody else's?
I think because she has been through time so many times and has the memory of how exos were created, because she was in the program. Mm-hmm. She's one of the very first. She's also a very special exo. Her body is not like any of the other exo bodies. It was created specifically for her. and molded based on her actual body, right, unlike any other exo body. So it has many upgrades. Also, it is more thick than the other exo bodies, and there is
it's got some curves there is, to it.
It's got, oh yeah, she Elsie thick.
She's a real exo.
She's a real exo, yeah. She's a real exo lady. So there's actual in-game dialogue about that, how some of the other exos are very jealous of Elsie's thick curves and why they don't have it, and she does.
Who do I talk to about that upgrade?
Exactly. Why does her body have them and ours right. doesn't? But that's awesome. I think with all of that experience, I think it's kind of a curse more than a blessing that she has, yep, all of that, because she has to deal with all of those memories and all of that perspective. So it's, if you have to deal with like that angle that you're looking at, instead of it being like a positive angle, it's more of like, if you're like filming something, it's more of like a Dutch angle, because you're like,
Yeah, it's as they say, she who increaseth knowledge increaseth
sorrow. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because, I mean, how, like we were talking about, like, how many times can you kill your sister and it be okay, even if you're not close to her? Because Elsie, specifically, she was a lot like her grandfather, in as much as that she's not very sentimental. And she chooses to be very, very much more like a robot than other exos. She doesn't want to be human. So with that in mind, like, how much does she really want to, I guess, like, how, like, what does that perspective force on her? Does that make sense?
Does she really, like, want to save everybody, or is she doing, yeah, this for some personal, like...
I don't know if she's doing it for a personal reason. I think she's actually just trying to, like, save all of humanity and just, like, get out of it.
Yeah. It's almost like a grim responsibility that she doesn't, yes, really feel strongly about. It's just something, yeah, that she knows she has to do.
It's a grim resignation that, like, she is the only one with the information. She has done, right, it so many times. She has to be the one that does it.
I did want to take a second to thank Orchid and Elmist again for joining us on this episode. It's been really great having you. I've gotten an education. You two have enlightened me on several things that I was clueless about. So, yeah, I had a great time. And please, the floor is yours. If you have any final thoughts, or if you would just like to share anything else about Guardians of Lore, anything big you have coming up that you want to share, and how can listeners find you?
Let's see. We just finished recording a bunch of episodes from, like, the newest lore books that you can finally get in game. The ones we're actually starting to look backwards now, because we've kind of exhausted our newest lore finally. So we're starting to look back towards, like, Luna's Lost, nice, and things like that. So we're very excited to kind of take a step back, because like we said earlier, we're kind of at that part of the season, even in our own podcast, where we can be like, okay, phew, we're finally at that point where we can look back and see at things that we've been wanting to do. They haven't really had the time. We're also looking towards doing, like, a Vault of Glass episode, since Vault is coming out soon. And for me, that was the one, raid that I've done like 80 times. I don't raid.
Yeah, that was at all.
Elmas is the big one that raids out of the two of us. Like, he's a big PvE sweat. I'm the one that does trials every weekend.
Yeah.
So I'm the lighthouse person that goes and visits the space pigeons. He's the one that does the raids.
Does flawless on the raids.
He does flawless raids. I do flawless trials.
Nice. The two masters of the different schools. I like it.
Yeah, the two schools of Destiny. The two different people. I don't know if running around with fell winters is really, you know, something to be proud of.
It's in the game. It's exactly a viable weapon.
And until next season, when they're going to nerf it into the floor, it'll be fine. But anyway, so we're going to look towards doing, like, a big Vault of Glass episode. We're hoping to have some guests on again soon. We haven't really reached out to anybody yet, but so, like I said, it's more of a book club podcast. So that's kind of what we're up to on Guardians of Lore. And you can find us on Twitter at Guardians_lore. And you can find me at Hey, It's Orchid. You can find Elemist at I_am_Elemist. And you can also find all of our information and also FFC and other lore podcasts and lore people in the Destiny community at the Lore Network. So we have a big network of lore people in the Destiny community. Yeah, so you can look at thelorenetwork.com as we say, alongside many impressive lore content creators.
And you can actually find the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts.
Wherever you view your pod is what I like to say. But
well, that about wraps it up. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please take a second to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us grow the show. Be sure to connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at lore_party. And check out our YouTube page for bonus videos and highlights. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time.